Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras. This week, we are going to do a bit of a follow-up on last week. If you didn't hear, we were at a school in London, one of Eartha's buddies. And in the meantime, we had the amazing announcement that the UK government is actually going to provide more than £6 million in funding. So we're going to chat about that. Obviously, we'll do our football roundup, as we always do. And our second half, we're doing a bit different today. We're going to take some questions from you guys and pop them in there. All right. So heading into our first half, how does that make you feel? I mean, after all the work that's gone into it, we saw the Lionesses write the letter to the government asking for football to be in schools for girls. And now we've had the announcement that there's £600 million in funding. But what does that mean?
Yeah, I think it's a great announcement. It's been a long time coming, I guess. If you're an educator or in schools, we know how well this is going to sort of pan out for girls to have that equal access. And it's not about having more football for girls. It's about actually them having the same amount. So, for example, if there's a boys after school club, then there should be a girls after school club, etc. So that's really, really good. I guess for me, it's really about looking at the detail, like you said, Bex, about what does that actually mean in reality. There's quite a heavily investment in terms of primary school provision. And I know there's been a lot of research. And as a secondary school teacher myself, a lot of the time the fallout in terms of girls' participation is in the secondary phase of school. So I'm really keen to see what does that realistically look like. And knowing timetabling is really difficult. So actually, how is that going to happen on the ground? So it's great on paper, but really keen to see what does that look like in terms of facilitating that for secondary school girls and then being able to sort of access those pathways. But overall, it's always great to sort of have that type of investment. It's just about ironing out those creases. And I assure you, there will be many creases to iron out. So this is, take it as version 1.0. And I think before to get it right, we most probably have to get to at least version 5.0. So
I think that was my question around it. It's great. I think obviously the letter that the Lionesses wrote in the summer to try and get this funding has come through. So in terms of that, and the funding is there, now it's a question about how is it being used and how are we going to develop, as you mentioned, primary school into senior, where there's a massive dropout in senior schools in terms of female participation. Mm-hmm. And then the wider, for me, it goes beyond, you know, just education in school in terms of football being brought into the curriculum. It's the after school, it's the grassroots teams. Where does, like, you know, that needs investment, and you know, that's a pathway that's probably going to be missed out. Then you go to the elite game, the RTCs, mm-hmm. And how that's funded, because you know, if we are wanting to grow the game, and certainly at the elite end of the game, and we talk about the future generation of players, if we're now heavily investing in primary schools with unqualified, you know, football experts, mm-hmm. are they going to want to engage in that anyway, or is it just about the participation and fun? Is a question for me. But also you think about RTCs, how are we supposed to develop our elite players if they're still on a part-time schedule of twice a week training in an evening, so after school hours, the timings in which they do that with, again, some of these coaches are, you know, parents that probably want to top up their salary and coach kids and have a, you know, a love for that. So, you know, there's loads of question marks as to what the funding is going to do.
And I think just kind of back on that sort of allocation of time, like, let's not shy away from, there's already a recommendation of 2 hours of physical activity, which we're not currently meeting.
So a recommendation too, you said, right? It's not mandatory.
It's not mandatory, but I guess that's where, I guess, the government are now saying that they should have that time. So it's kind of moving from a recommendation to some sort of potential legislation around it being in the timetable. They already can't find the time as the recommendation. So where are they finding the time due to this legislation. And then when we look at that sort of primary school provision, like even the girls mentioned before when we spoke last week, quite often that's the subject, if they need an intervention or if someone does something wrong, that's taken out. So who's going to check that that's not happening?
That's the point. That is the point. And also you talk about, like, so you go, okay, recommended 2 hours, right? You think about the time girls, boys, whatever, take to get ready, mm-hmm. right? Then they think about the time that then they have to go and get ready, unready, back into school uniform. So already taking out half an hour of that physical. Yep. And then you talk about explaining what they're going to do, setting up, blah, blah, blah. You've already lost an hour. So actually, you're putting all this in,
an hour
investment in, and you've already lost an hour of time. Actually, the actual contact time in PE anyway, yeah. is very limited. I remember we used to go out and I'd be like, it's finished.
I was the one that would complain, right?
Because I'm like, 2 hours, it felt like a 10-minute lesson
yeah.
of actually doing something. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be the same when you're investing all yeah. this money. Surely it would have been better to do like invest that money in physical education outside of school hours. So an after-school club, for example, yeah. where actually everybody can access it at that period, or a lunchtime access or whatever, where there's more time yeah. and you're not rushed to get back into other subjects.
And this well, is everybody's fired for
one
time.
Of my questions too, because... like if you look at in the US how they've done it with investment, we had Title IX in 1971, which meant that you had to have equal investment in the university programs, which meant that it had to be equal investment into sports programs. So technically you should have the same number of scholarships for men as you do for female athletes. However, what we've seen through the years, and there's a lot of research coming out now actually on the fact that it isn't equal. It's nowhere near equal. So there's been something that's been put in place, and everyone sort of attributes Title IX as all the success of female athletes in the US and all the gold medals and everything to Title IX. And yet we're seeing that it hasn't been equal. It hasn't been fair. And is that money arguably better spent elsewhere? Like you're saying, you know, does it make more sense to spend it at a level where they're falling out of school, you know, and create programs or put more money into clubs, you know, because in the US you have to pay to play, and here the clubs are all self-funded, you know, and then that model, is that sustainable for long term? I mean, I think that that's worth looking at as well.
Yeah, I think that that's more of a sustainable model in terms of based on the resources that are currently available. And I think we've got to just be realistic, like, who's going to hold these people to account if it doesn't happen?
That's the problem.
This is the reality.
Investing money into things that are not people that aren't exactly. held accountable. So really, is it going to improve the development? Maybe participation, mm-hmm. because you have to do it.
Yes.
It's like you could say participation within schools in terms of doing, I don't know, trampolining or hockey, all of these sports that you have to do. Mm-hmm. You could say, well, school participation has risen because of that.
Yeah.
You're forced to do those subjects.
100%.
So what I'm saying is that going to increase out of hours, so your grassroots participation and elite participation, I'm not sure. Or is it going to make them even better? I'm not sure.
So are you guys saying that you would then have preferred that the Lionesses hadn't written that letter to government to get more funding into schools? They should have looked at, or we should be looking at, funding going into different places rather than what the Lionesses had requested from the government?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's needed anyway. Like, in terms of, like, it's not where it should be. So that letter is definitely positive in terms of being more physically active. We look at the impact of, and just take football away from it, in terms of actually how active should people be, how it's impacting society in general, obesity, how can we create more sports stars, or people just living a healthy lifestyle that will obviously increase mortality rates, etc., in terms of extending those. But I think in terms of, is it specific in terms of football, and do we have the resources to track and monitor it? No. It's not really there. What it does, it really just allocates more time of young people being able to do the right things in schools in terms of their physical well-being.
Which is positive, right? That's at least a step in the right... Yeah.
Exactly, but again...
You'll probably get more letters from home saying my daughter can't participate in PE today.
Exactly.
Which is what happens anyway in schools. If the kid doesn't want to do it, mm-hmm. they won't participate. They'll write their own letter or they get a parent's letter. So again, it won't be trackable anyway. But
yeah.
It's great.
And just on that point as well, because I had a head teacher reach out to me, and she was like, but what about for the kids who just really don't like doing physical education?
Yeah.
So it's about having that autonomy as well in terms of, it's not just about them playing football. It's about being creative and knowing your students and making sure you can provide an opportunity for them to be physically active as a group, as a collective, and their voices, I guess, being heard. Again, where is the time to do all this? Like, teachers are already doing their subjects, doing pastoral stuff, they're being acting as parents, as everything in one. When are they just being able to teach? So it's a part of a bigger ecosystem in terms of that. But like Farah said, I think in terms of where are they then able to sort of navigate the game when we're looking at it from a football perspective, like when we're talking about the ETCs, the new like emerging talent centres, like are they going to be going in there? Are we going to get more access to talent? Is the talent going to be better because they're being more physically active? So I guess, is the starting line of the players that are coming in going to be higher as a result of that? I mean, and we won't know until at least another 5 years. Yeah, 5-10 years. So we'll see. But it can't be any worse than it currently is. That's what we do know.
Yeah, and at least it's a starting point, right? At least we're giving girls and boys, but girls in particular, the opportunity to be able to move their bodies, to go outside, to learn different sports, whether or not it's from a professional football coach or just from someone that sort of picked up the game through books or whatever. But at least they're given an opportunity that wasn't there before. So surely it must be the right step in the right direction. And then once that's doors open, we can then see, okay, can the funding be allocated differently? You know, where are the hangups? Where is the impact actually happening? Those types of things. So you can tweak the system. But without it actually starting, it felt like it was a dead end to begin with anyway, right?
Exactly. The race has to start somewhere. And I think we have, as I said, we'll get onto things like upskilling teachers and coaches, because no,
but that's
have you ever had a rubbish football PE lesson?
Oh my God, you just get a ball. It's but what I'm saying is that that's the thing, right? You go in teaching in specific areas or whatever of teaching. Nobody goes in to be a teacher, a full-time teacher in a school, to be a football coach, right? A specialist football coach. You're a PE teacher, so you're multi-skilled, aren't you, for all of these different, what are they? So you're multi-skilled for all these different sports. So you're not an expert in any of the sports, but you're aware of all of them and you have a knowledge of each of them to be able to deliver a session for your pupils.
Yeah.
So it's not going to, it might increase the participation. You're forced now to do a sport that you weren't before, like you're forced to do other sports in school that you don't enjoy. So I'm just trying to work out whether it's going to make it any better in terms of them coming out of there wanting to take up football. I think they would do it anyway. Do you know what I mean? Because there's subjects in school that you take up outside of school because you have a love for that. Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't have to be in school for you to want to go and do it outside of school.
I think like we're looking at things often from the elite level, like what's the elite pathway? How, you know, they're not getting professional coaching. They're not, it's not going to be top level, but there's also an argument like just go out and play, you know, like just have a ball. Like that's the beauty of football, isn't it? It's one of the most easily accessible sports on the entire planet. You can literally crush a can and kick the can, which we did as well at school. But and arguably you just want kids to be moving and playing, and to be able to participate means that they might be more interested in watching. Doesn't mean they necessarily have to be a Beth Mead or a Jill Scott, who were at the number 10 the other week as well. You know, they just want to play, right?
That's my point, Beck. And that was me as a kid growing up. I just wanted to play football. If you told me in school, in primary school, that you wanted to actually tell me what to do, how to turn, how to strike a ball correctly, without me actually problem solving it myself and actually finding that own solution, I don't think I would have developed the way I did, right? When you go into the elite game, you expect those expertise, right? So it's more about facilitating. In schools, it should be just go and enjoy it, facilitate it.
And then
at the elite should be coached, because I think too much at these levels. So of course, if you're going to do it and you're going to invest that much money, I would argue then get expertise in. But the point of that then is then you lose the joy of the game, which you want. You want kids to enjoy it, right? If it becomes so structured, then all of a sudden it becomes difficult. It's like lessons, right? If you aren't engaged in a lesson and it becomes difficult for you, you disengage. You then don't develop within that lesson, right? Yeah. So English for me, I found reading difficult, right? So then when I'm getting told to read out, I'm wanting to be naughty to get out of the lesson because I'm not quite at the level to read out. It'll be the same with sport. You start getting asked to do a skill, for example, that you find really difficult, you will then become disengaged because it becomes too complicated.
So
that should be the elite end in terms of the detailed coaching, because that's your expertise now as a footballer. You could potentially go and be a professional.
Yeah.
Why do it at grassroots and in schools where it should be about the enjoyment and you know, learning your own way whilst being guided.
Yeah, so it's about modeling aspects of excellence. So this really is about participation. Like, there are those people who can do a Cruyff turn, who can do a however many kick-ups, and that's an example of, if you want to reach these specific outcomes, mm-hmm. this is what it takes to be there. So it's about you just doing your best as you can, and then on top of that, if you can add that, or you can bring this into your arsenal of skills, then that's great, because that shows development. But I had to learn really quickly as a teacher, these are not footballers. Like, I promise you, like, I literally, when I became a teacher, I was like, the only thing I need to do is get them to progress. Like, first of all, enjoy it.
Just join
it. Enjoy it. Just join the beast swarm. And make progress. Because if I focused on them being a footballer, I promise you, it would never happen.
With the money and whatever being invested, and it being spoken about so much, that the focus then will become, actually, we need to teach these people how we know it to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the enjoyment and everything, the participation will be lost anyway, because they're like, I don't want to attend it.
I hope not.
Mum, write me a PE lesson. I'm ill. I got bellyache.
It will definitely, like, they'll be like, that's my point. They'll write certainly letters. Yeah. I've got letters. Like, I actually used to keep them. I've got this folder. I know you laugh. I should bring them in one day. And it's literally every time a child brought a note in, say, oh, I can't do PE today, I'd be like, that's great. Get yourself changed. They're like, yeah, but we miss my mum's. I said, yeah, I know, but there's something for you to do in the lesson. Like, I'm talking like kids on crutches, kids with hands in cast. I'm like, you can do video analysis.
I'm saying, how long does that take for a teacher in terms of the amount of pupils that then come and be like, miss, I can't participate? That takes up time, right? So you're already losing lesson time by all of that.
But that's nonsense. If you listen to them. I'm like, yeah, quick, get changed. I'm like, so we have this thing in teaching.
Everybody's not you, Irfan.
I know you talked about, just quickly, in terms of like reduced time. Like, realistically, you have about half an hour, yes, of an hour's lesson when you're actually teaching. So you have incentives, like there's a thing called do now. So that means, like, as soon as you come into the change room, you do this thing now. And it's like meant to like motivate kids. You're to like, they have, yes, you have an 8 minute, it used to be, I don't know what it is now. It used to be 8 minutes. So when Ofsted were coming, if they came to a session lesson, the lesson should start within 8 minutes. So kids to get changed, you should be starting the lesson within 8 minutes of them arriving to you. So you have things like, oh, you can get like positive points, or you get like things that incentive that helps them to be like, if they get changed first. There was this one girl, I promise you, she'll get changed in 20 seconds.
That'll be me.
I promise you. Like,
she wanted her gold star, didn't she?
Oh, wait, how can I do this?
She wore it literally, she wore it under her uniform. She always wanted the bonus points. And she was in like flash and back out. I'm like, Sarah, how did you get changed so quick? So I miss you, know I'm number one. Like, she used to absolutely love it. But there are incentives. But yeah, I think, like, just kind of bringing it all back in, it's all about participation, and that has to be main focus.
And isn't it all about the fact that all kids are different? We have such a wide range of those who want to participate in sports and those who really don't, who want to get involved in sports, but not from a physical standpoint. And it's just about giving opportunities to more kids. So I guess that's kind of the point of getting things started, getting the ball rolling, so to say. But I think that could wrap up our chat, unless you guys have any dying points that you have to say. We can move on to our halftime team talk.
Can the Lionesses write a letter to the RTCs or the Premier League or whoever, FA?
There we go.
And ask them to help invest in RTCs, because the longer we have a two-hour RTC session every week, two-hour sessions, we're going to be so far behind the boys' game anyway, in terms of like...
That, and what's RTC again, for those who don't know, Farah?
Regional Talent Camp. ETC is probably a chain of Elite Talent Centres. Sorry, so it was RTC, Regional Talent Centres. Now it's ETC, Elite Talent Centres. But I'm saying, until they change that in terms of like how many hours, contact hours they get, our game ain't going to grow and develop anyway.
Not the elite end, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. At the elite end. So yeah, I'm just like, I find that part frustrating.
And then
that's why we bring overseas players in, because they're ready made, you know, players. Whereas we ain't really bringing anybody through the ETCs into the 21 stroke senior football, because they're just not ready, because they haven't had enough contact time when they're younger.
Well, that's interesting.
But yeah, that was my talking.
Yeah, we were just talking about the development of like women's rugby in the US and looking at the benefits of the NWSL and what were the successes of that? Why has it been, you know, quote unquote successful? And for me, it's a lot about the university system, because that, you know, between 16 to 21, first of all, you're gunning to get to that. So you get those contact hours, you get those touches on the ball because you want to be recruited. And then you're in a professional environment from 17, 18 till 20, 21. And that really becomes your job because you're being paid technically to be at the university. And you know, without that system, it is hard to compete, I think, because you're you know, the clubs are semi-pro, that type of thing at that age. But anyway, it's a good start. It's great. We'll ask the Lionesses to write letters to all the things that we would like them to write to. Maybe we can get some fans as well to write in and let us know what they think the Lionesses should be gunning for next. But that wraps up our first half. All right, heading into our halftime team talk. We have a lot to talk about this week because a lot has happened in the Barclays WSL over here in England. Where do you want to kick off? Because there's been a lot happening. I personally saw the Chelsea-Man United game and thought that Chelsea deservedly won. Probably Sam Kerr could have had had three goals in the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes of the game. And I mean, I hate to say it as a Kiwi, but I think Sam Kerr has been the difference in for that Chelsea squad. And we haven't talked about her a lot, but thoughts on that game, because there was obviously no punditry, so you weren't at any games this weekend, Farah. But did you watch that game? What'd you think?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, I did. I mean, look, Sam Kerr was for sure the difference in that game between the two teams. I think she's been phenomenal. I think, you know, if you was to pinpoint a couple of players this season, her, Bonnie Shaw, Manchester City, in terms of standouts, those two, I don't think anyone comes close to in terms of how they're, you know, certainly carrying their teams in big moments. I wouldn't say throughout, you know, every game, but certainly in the big moments when they're needed. Bonnie Shaw and Sam Kerr, the two players that have been phenomenal this year and certainly showed pure consistency. I mean, the goal itself, I mean, the pass from Lauren James, the vision to see the pass, the execution of the pass, and then the take from Sam Kerr, I mean, to just soften the touch, you know, a ball that's coming at a mad angle compared to where she's running, to just soften it off her chest and then have the audacity to just touch it over the top of Mary Earps. I mean,
Drake
got mobbed there, but it was right now.
It was just, yeah, FIFA best keeper, but the goal itself was just world class. Like, you know, arguably it's going to be goal of the season. I can't see anything coming close in terms of like complete goal. It was phenomenal. But look, Sam, you're right. I had a few chances within that game. I think Chelsea showed the difference in that winning mentality and know-how. I think I've said it all season. They seem to have a know-how how to win games. I think Man United should have had two penalties without doubt. I think the officiating in terms of certainly the first one on Nikita Paris wasn't great, because I think that the Nikita Paris one was a definite penalty. And it was also missed a week before in the cup final against Arsenal. The same player, Buchanan, did exactly the same thing on, I think it was on Caitlin Ford, if I can remember rightly. Penalty wasn't given, should have been given if we'd had VAR. So I think that there would have been, and considering it's a big game, it's a title game, you know, to have those, as I say, those shouts missed is a tough take. I'm not saying it would have changed the course of the game, but who knows? We're never going to know now. They were definitely two penalty shouts.
They definitely would have been given against
They would have been given. Well, what they would have been given. But also, I think a fair point to say about Chelsea, we talk about Arsenal, right? Having Miedema and Beth Mead out. Chelsea have had Frank Kirby and Harder out pretty much the whole season. Nobody has spoken about these big misses for Chelsea, and Chelsea have just gone about their business and continue to win games in the way in which they have, without, for me, in my opinion, two key players within that squad, players that actually initiate Chelsea's press. If you notice, at times you've seen Chelsea drop off and play a lot without the ball, and I think it's because of that. I think it's because they don't have those two key players. Harder, for me, between her and Sam Kerr, in terms of their press, Chelsea's press, last season especially was phenomenal, right? Without her in the team, I think you have to adapt, and I think that's what they've done. And that's where I think Sam Kerr took the lead role in that. You'll see at times she'll dictate a press. There's times where she'll communicate to her players around her to sit in because she understands her players around her that can't or aren't as not even smart. Maybe it is smart, maybe defensively smart in doing that. Or probably not on the same page yet because they haven't played together long enough to know. But it's true what Emma Hayes says. You know, nobody's mentioned the fact that they have two key players out and have had them out all season and yet still sitting 5 points clear at the top of the table.
Yeah, and obviously Cuthbert went in the squad either. Yeah. Was Guro
injured? Yeah. Wright and injured. Ill, as well. Cuthbert was injured and Wright and ill.
A lot of key players missing from that game. But like you said, just, I guess, the experience of them and that winning mentality is what sort of takes them through. But yeah, I guess I'm always wondering, like, what could have been? Because for me, they were stonewall penalties. Mm-hmm. Like, how they weren't given is above me. And we talked about former players becoming referees, and Cheryl Foster, right, was refereeing the game. I don't know. I rate her so highly.
Like
she got in the line of the ball. Remember, we were talking about players recognize it a little bit better, and then just those clear decisions. There was a few things where I was like, yeah, that's good. She's there, play on. Yeah, it's got a little bit of fire in it. But then the other ones where it's just like they're clear. It just makes you just sigh. Like really, like you've got that one wrong. But yeah, I guess that's the human error of refereeing. And what are we saying? Do we want it to be down to the millimetre again where we're making decisions? I think stuff like that where it's clear goal-bound decisions. Yeah. Yes, we want that to be better in terms of potential.
I think the key one was more clear.
That one was clear. Yeah.
And the fact that Buchanan got herself defensively in the wrong positions a few times this year, and as you said, it was only a week ago, that if you watch how she gets her body, like she does that quite often. She's in the wrong position defensively, tries to recover that and always will go across the back of the attacker. So it's always likely to commit a foul or a free kick, penalty, whatever you call it.
Most of the time, right?
Most of the time. The positioning. So what I'm saying is that referees, and I was with Cheryl Foster last month in Rome with the referees, and she actually says they do watch games because they want to be a little bit ahead of what, you know, certain players and how they play. So I am surprised they missed that one. I am surprised.
Yeah. For me, the second one's clear.
You think?
Second one, I didn't. That's too sure on the second one.
Let me tell you. I'm a player who smashes players, yeah. And
so
I promise
you know what you were doing.
That is a clear penalty. There's no way she's out there. That was a penalty.
No chance. No. On McCabe?
No.
Carter on Badger.
The second
match. Oh, yeah.
You're on about the Reading game. You're on about Reading.
No, the header.
Oh, Katie McCabe.
The header. Yeah, no. That wasn't. She didn't have possession of the ball, and she was sort of unstable going into the header anyway. And
so it's not a foul?
No.
Anywhere outside of the box, is that a foul?
Yeah, it's done a penalty though.
Is that a foul though?
The ball, they both go up for the header. Like she does hit her. She does like go through a bit tough, but she didn't have proper possession of the ball. She was unstable going up as well. And if you see like where the ball goes anyway, it goes like right to Millie. So anywhere else on the pitch.
No, but forget about the penalty.
It would have been a really, really. She could have given it.
I think the first one's definite. The second one would have been really soft.
But
it's a debate for the second one. I say the Parrots one. But you're right.
That's what then sort of made people focus on, okay, it was now two. It was definitely two. Whereas, you know, I don't think people would have looked at that second one and gone, that's 100% a penalty. Maybe, but no, it wasn't.
No, I'm not agreed in saying it was a penalty, the second one. Mm. I was saying that it would get looked at for sure. Right, yeah. But the first one for me is a penalty. The second one is debatable. Definitely. It's not definite. But you're right in saying if that was outside the box, I think it would be given as a free kick. So there it goes, and why isn't it a penalty?
Me as a defender going for that challenge, I'm saying, and I got away with that, I'd be like, whew. I promise you, I know that's a foul.
Yeah, that's a player mentality. And that's what the referees have to struggle with every week, is that players know what they're doing. Referees are not looking at it like that. So the intent behind what you're doing, like I know there were things I would do in a game thinking, I'm going to do that and see if I could just pull the wool over the referee. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, am I going to get away with it? That would have been you, right?
Yeah.
With that.
Well, do you think, because this is one of the things I was talking to the referees about afterwards. Like, do you think because, and I think Nikita Paris is a great player, so don't get me wrong, but do you think because she goes down a lot and she is vocal when she goes down and she's looking for fouls, Do you think that that is one element? I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying, do you think that that would influence you as a referee too? Because you're like, I know she's always looking for fouls. I know she's going out screaming. Like,
yeah, referees definitely look at that, Bex. Based off the conversation I had with them out on the referees course, they definitely look at that. What a player trades.
It's exactly
what's
the same.
What's a trade of players? It's like you get a reputation, don't you, as a player? It's like they know players behave in certain ways. And of course, they look at that. And that will be in the back of their mind going in. Some referees will say, no, I go in a blank canvas. I was going to say bullshit, because it is bullshit. They don't go in a blank canvas.
It's the same with preference to other players and other teams. But it's a natural bias. When you see something, it's about you. How do you get away from that habitual thing that you're like, oh, that player goes down, da, 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 and it's natural. You're having to come away from something that is a natural default.
Yeah.
So again, this is where you have the best referees or the best deliverers are able to do that, and that's what makes you the best. But
well, I also I hear what you're saying, but I also think the best referees know the players. Because if you know that they're looking for those types of things, you're not going to be like faked out by different things that maybe aren't fouls, you know, because you're like, oh my gosh, they're screaming, so it must be. But if you know that that's what they do, you're going to take a second look at it, but be a bit closer. So yeah, you have to be neutral, totally agree. But also, I think it does help to know the players.
Yeah, but you have to recognize it though, right? When it's
still if it's a foul, it's a foul. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Let's move on to Arsenal though, because that was a very solid match again from Arsenal. I think Monum is slowly becoming one of my favorite players.
That's a champion's performance. A champion performance that was. That's what happens when you get silverware all of a sudden.
I also think the penalty changed the game. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Like the penalty decision, which again, soft. Yes, there was a bit of contact from the arm. That's the only thing I could see. Tiny bit of contact from the arm. It changes the game. Mm. You know, you go down to a penalty that arguably wasn't a penalty, and the whole face of the game changes. You know, Reading are definitely trying to come into that game with the tactics of let's stay in the game, let's try and hit them on the counter, for example. Let's be compact. You give away an early penalty, Kim Little converts. It's pretty much game over.
So you can't revert back to that mentality again then, in terms of
you can, but it can be one difficult. You kind of lose you can but then
the
good teams, right, once you break a low block or a block down, right, once you get that goal, it feels all of a sudden you're then not forcing things, right? So it becomes easier to then score again.
Yeah,
there's no more forcing. So when you're playing against a block and you can't break that down, you force. You become desperate, right? Mm-hmm. You get a penalty and all of a sudden you're 1-0 up. So that one goal that you need changes the dynamic of the game, because you're waiting for that one moment. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, you don't force things. You can play your normal way. But mentally, you know, when you're playing against a block and you are trying to score a goal and it could take until the 80th minute.
Yeah,
frustrating. The type of passes you make, you're trying to get the perfect pass, you're trying to get the perfect goal. You get a penalty off and you score it. All of a sudden, oh, chill. Let's relax. Let's play our normal game, which is what Arsenal did and came into their own and then dominated completely, which they were always going to do.
Exactly.
But I'm saying they could have dominated for long spells having not scored if that penalty hadn't come in.
It's the mentality, right?
Got frustrated. Reading could have got a transition goal or something like that. Yeah, could have then really frustrated them to
do the game the longer.
To the number nine team on the roster, yeah.
But I definitely think the silverware, like you heard Leo Williamson talk after the game, you know, nothing has changed in terms of the togetherness within the team, but something has definitely clicked. So it's always been there, but something just clicked. It might have been that 45 minute against Chelsea in the cup, and then getting that silverware, all of a sudden now they're playing the way
that we're champions, isn't it? It showed that actually if this is the best team, if this is the champions, if this is what they've got to deliver, and we can beat them, like all of a sudden, like we're great. And I give a rubbish example. So in school, my sister was like quite a big character, and my little brother started that secondary school, and a lot of the other kids were like, oh yeah, like, she's one of the strongest in the school, so she's really big. And he's like, well, I fight her at home, so that means I must be up there in terms of like one of the key kids in school. And I'm like, you're year seven, you can't be like a big dominant figure in school. But he's like, nah, because you're scared of my sister, so I'm second rank because I can fight my sister. But who's the biggie? Sure.
No, the big, but I'm talking Liverpool, Tottenham, you lot's team, right? You lot's some Spurs. Nine beaten on the bounce, right? We've been talking about it on the pod for a long time. And like, you's kind of like, you know, think back to the beginning of the podcast, at the beginning of the season, we kind of all spoke about the teams that we thought would finish in the top three. And it kind of become our little bit of a joke, right, about about Tottenham. Not that we have, or I certainly don't have anything against them, but it was more the point of, I actually didn't think off the back of last season they would fit in the top three.
Which,
I mean, at the beginning of the season, Erfi, you and Bex both thought they would, right? My point is the investment from Spurs and Jan Skinner and the players they brought in, they have underachieved massively this season.
Yeah.
Big time.
So 100%. This was just about timing. It wasn't like, I was asking the question a few weeks ago, like, at what point, and look, because the game's about, the manager's under pressure now. The amount of investment within the game, it's a results-based game now. So these managers that aren't getting results and are looking like they're falling down, at some point, you then have to question the manager. Like in the men's game, if you go on a nine-game unbeaten, or sorry, beat and run, you're going to be questioned as a manager. No one in the women's game seems to ever want to challenge that. For me, I was saying weeks ago, look, we have to ask these questions. Why is Rianne Skinner not being questioned or challenged about the results and the performances their team are getting? Yeah. Yes, they had a tough run of games. They had Chelsea, they had Arsenal, they've had a tough one, Manchester City. But to go away to a newly promoted team in Liverpool and lose 2-1, it was only a matter of time before, you know, somebody was like, look, you've got to go. We are like players off bottom.
Guys, is that the third or the fourth manager we've lost this season? We lost Hope Powell to Brighton. We lost Leicester City, changed their one as well. Is this the third one?
Yep.
It is.
Three or four. Three.
At least three, right? At least three season. Like that's quite a massive difference, because we were talking about that. You were talking about that at the very beginning of the season. You know,
I think in Hope's situation,
Hope's
wasn't a sacking. Hope wanted to leave the club. She felt it was time that she moved on. So Hope's wasn't a sacking. I actually think Brighton would be in a better place if they'd have kept hold of Hope. They've lost their way. There was four sackings. The Brighton manager, you're right, Bex. The Brighton manager got sacked. He only had been in the job for four weeks, wasn't it?
2 months. Yeah.
2 months of where he was. So
there's a shift, isn't there, like this season? Because we didn't have that. We didn't see that as much in the women's game. You saw it all the time in Premier League. You lose two games, you're out. But in the women's game, this is it's a little bit more of a trend now, isn't it?
They're desperate to stay in the league. Because for me, once you fall out of this WSL1, it is tough to get back up into it. It's tough. And financially, like especially with the financial prizes, like the difference between finishing ninth and eighth is massive. It's like 100,000. Yeah. For the women's game, it's big. So you thinking about those positioning, Spurs have invested all of that money. Their prize money, if they finish second bottom, third bottom, is going to be poor. Really, really bad in terms of, I know the investment's not, but like these teams, they will be looking at that. Spurs would have been thinking fourth, fifth. Going into the season, they would have been thinking, let's finish fourth or fifth. That would have been their ambition from the beginning of the season.
That's their ambition.
Okay,
but come
on. So you thought third. So why are they any different?
No, I had a little bit
I'm being dead serious now. They would have thought that based off of last season's performances. They were good last year. They didn't concede goals.
But then they had Rachel Williams up front. They had they had different personnel. And if we look at what the other teams have done in terms of like Villa, Liverpool, West, they've all invested in terms of, I guess they've kept a core structure, but the players that they've brought in has added to it. What Tottenham's done is added good quality, but they've also taken out good quality. Mm-hmm. So they're not adding in terms of becoming a better team, because the baseline's gone even lower because they've removed other players. So I guess for me, and I think Bex was saying about Premier League managers like getting sacked after a certain amount of games, there's only a few teams in the WSL anyway. So you, the fact that you've been given nine games, that's basically half the season.
Half the season gone.
To lose, to make that decision.
I know,
like,
mad.
That is like, how do
not
you
good.
Get that type of privilege?
It's not good.
How is it
like the privilege
to get to lose half of your whole season?
It's not good to have to walk out the door and be like, well, that's number nine. I think I might be out now. I mean, that's not a good look, is it? Like,
well, that's not
going to go from there. But
it's a lot of games.
That's half your season. Like, it's, and I guess, what does that say, I guess, in terms of player morale? Because they're like, if we keep losing, nothing's changing, everything's the same. What are we going to do differently? There's going to be players who are not playing, who most probably think I should be playing, and I'm not getting a chance. And these guys are still losing, and I still can't get a chance. Like, what's the effort that you're putting into training? Like, I don't even know if you're even going to be bothered, because you're like, oh, the team's going to be the same. They've been losing all the time. She still ain't changed it. It's the same majority of players that are in. Like, and that's the thing in terms of like the morale and the buzz around the club.
I don't know how she couldn't get the best out of the players that she had there. Their team's better than last season, right? Their squad is better than last season. Yeah. Fact. The absolute fact. Apart from Rach Williams, who was a goal scorer for them, their squad on paper is very good. A competitive team, good players, right? How, as a manager, was you not able to get the very best out of those players?
We'll see what the next manager does, because that will be super interesting moving on to you know, finishing up the season, seeing if Tottenham will stay in that number 10 position. They're only 1 point above Brighton and two above Leicester City with 9 points. But speaking about, you just said training off the pitch and that all of that work that's going on, what we've seen Bunny Shaw do this season is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, she is, again, the number one, number two, player in the league right now, again on the score sheet, highest scoring
like
player from
you like that for sure.
Putting her number in there, and for sure. She's number one. Like, come on, like, mate, she's got to be number one.
She broke the record this year.
She broke what in terms of the City, and we're not even, the season's not even over.
And she hasn't been there.
And she hasn't even been there that long. Like
unreal.
I think we've talked about it before. Like, the Caribbean is such an untouched, like, resource.
If I told you already, I wanted to get this girl years ago. Maybe.
It's unreal. I think her coming in, like, that she just fitted in the team. Like, she just brings that buzz. Like, the players look like they enjoy playing with her. She looks like she's enjoying being at Man City. And, yeah, I just can't wait to see her just hit the back of the net even more. Really, it's great for the league. It's a great story for the league as well. So
keeps that fourth spot alive.
Do you know what also I think is so cool about her is to see how raw she was just a couple of years ago and to how polished she is as a player now. It's so great to look at that development as a player. So for young girls coming through, the amount of work that she's putting in off the pitch to really hone in on her skills. I mean, her first touch has improved immensely. Like, we used to watch her play for Jamaica, you know, 5-7 years ago. To where she is now, she looks like a completely different player, and that's I think is really cool, because she's clearly taken it into her own hands and gone, I'm going to be the best player I possibly can. I'm not going to rely just on Man City's coaching. I'm not going to rely on just Jamaica. You know, a lot of issues with the reggae girls and that Jamaican team of getting lack of funding, basically. And she's just gone, I'm going to do it, and she has.
I don't think she's even at her best yet. I think, and then coming in here and playing a higher level of football. I don't know if you've seen the pictures in Jamaica, but touch maybe was in there. But yeah, I think obviously, as you said, Bex, her performances is through the roof. And I think she's only just getting started. If I'm being dead honest, that's the scary. Yeah, it's so scary. Awesome. Like, she's got so much more to give. I'm talking like I know her. She's got so much more to give. Yeah. But from what I can see,
you think she's gone from, as you say, full time and probably getting a level of coaching, because Man City are a very structured club in terms of their coach detail. I remember I was just to speak to Jill about it, and she was like, look, the coaching here is tops. So it's no coincidence she's improved technically. And even her game understanding, I think it's her game understanding that's probably improved more so than anything, which allows you that more good players find their own time, right, to do things. Yeah. And that's what she's become, a player that seems to have a lot of time on the ball. But I think certainly.
Yeah, it's really good.
Top two in the league.
Very good. All right, so that wraps up our halftime team talk. Like we said, lots going on here in the UK. Amazing players to watch. And heading into the second half, we are going to take your questions, because we had some really good ones this week. And the first one, Eartha, this is a good one for you. Being able to be in a position to make changes in women's football. If you could make one change in women's football right now, what would it be?
I think for mine, it would be not one that maybe people would think of, but it would be to utilise more of the former players into the game and their experience. I think the game's growing at such a fast pace and it's becoming a lot more commercial. I think we're missing a trick in terms of what our game has been, I guess, in terms of the foundation, utilising players up and down the country in terms of their insights, experiences, and their voices, both, I guess, on the pitch, potentially in sort of coaching roles or within clubs, but also from a governance point of view, in terms of, like, I don't know, being a consultant or helping to shape the game, because they know it best. They've been in the game before there was eyes and ears on it, before there was all this funding. And what is a good practice? What is the things that's helped it get to that level before, and how can that support in terms of the game going forward? So for me, it would definitely be bringing back some of those ex-players and getting them involved more in the game.
Nice. And it was a good question from WSL Collective. Thank you for sending it in. And we follow you. We watch your platform as well. So thanks for showing all of the women's football things going on around the world. I think for me, it would be actually really similar, like on the same lines. It would be an autonomy in governance. And what I mean by that is rather than having all of the influence in trying to fight within a structure that's been built by men for men for men's football, is actually to have an autonomous system where we can govern the game by ourselves. And that doesn't mean all women, and it doesn't mean, you know, just former footballers, but it does mean experts that are in the women's game. It does mean bringing in expertise from the men's game, but really being able to make our own decisions. Because I think the biggest thing that's hindered the women's game for so long is just a lack of proper marketing, you know, looking at it as its own commercial entity, looking at it for its own brand, and being able to really, I don't know, make it fly as its own thing. So that would be for me what it is, and obviously more investment, but I think you can get that if you govern it the right way. So over to you. But yeah, I agree too about the getting more former players involved, because, you know, that's one of the reasons why I started Crux Sports, was trying to help consult and bring that expertise into the different stakeholders in football. And I do use former players as well. So any former players out there, if you're looking to get back into it, hit me up. All right. And on to the next question is from Melhammy23. I like this one. I like this one a lot. If Jordan Knobbs stays consistent, should she be on a plane to Australia? And I'm sure you meant to say New Zealand as well, Melhammy, in the summer.
I guess for me, if she's one of the best performing players at that time, at the end of the season, then yes. But I don't think we should put players on the plane just to put players on the plane. And I'm sure Jordan wouldn't want to just be on the plane because she's Jordan and everyone loves Jordan and she's played well for England and club before. I think it has to be done on merit. I guess Serena's going to have to look at the dynamics of the team. But I think the selection just has to be done with clear integrity, and with the goal of bringing back the trophy. I think that's the main aim. Like, what's the best hybrid of players that can go away and execute the job? And I'm so glad it's not me that's having to make that decision.
Yeah.
I'll pass it on to my fellow teacher Serena to do. But yeah, if she's right in terms of performance, in terms of the hybrid of players that are needed to go and execute the job at the time, and she's on form, then that should be the case, and it shouldn't be overridden by maybe someone else who's got a more high profile name on the back of the shirt, etc. For me, it's always about who's performing well, who can do the job, get them on the plane and bring the trophy home.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it is the team vibe that has to be right, isn't it? It's all the pieces in the puzzle that make it look as the best as a whole. And I also think it's a good question, because for me, it's about picking players that are at their peak. And if you have players that have a name, like you said, like a Fran Kirby, let's say, who's been injured for Chelsea and ill for a while, do you bring her because you know what's the potential that she has to do for England? Or do you bring a player that is just in that peak performance? And I think that's always been one of the biggest challenges for coaches. And as a player, you know, I always want just the best players at the time. You just want to win the games. And so, you know, for me, it was never about the big name players, but I know a lot of coaches still prefer to go with those big names because of their potential. So, it'll be an interesting one. I think it'll come down to the wire for Jordan somewhere.
Yeah, it's about, for me, I think it's about balancing out, I guess, across the team. Like, is there a thing where if you don't take a specific player for whatever reason who is on form, but actually you can compensate that elsewhere across the personnel within the team, and then maybe that other player who, you know, actually potentially hasn't been well or just coming back from injury, like a Chloe Kelly, but actually what she brings when she does come into play, then you're willing to take that risk because it is such a substantial difference.
Really?
And we've seen it work in the summer. Like, look, Chloe was sort of working her butt off to get fit, ready for that squad, and then look, it's like a fairy tale, right? She comes in the final game. She's been obviously an impact player throughout the tournament, but comes and scores that winning goal. Someone who wouldn't have been able to be, I guess, on form in terms of long-term across the season because of injury. But actually, it fits into the squad's ecosystem and what you need in terms of resources to be able to, I guess, place those Arsenals on the pitch as and when you need it, when the game needs changing. So
Is that why you got her jersey? That's why I got her jersey.
But do you know what? She, before the tournament even started, the Euros, I actually picked her as the standout player, as a player to watch. Maybe because she wore 18 as well, which is my favourite number. Maybe because she's a QPR fan. And all these sort of great reasons.
So nothing to do with her performance. Just like
that had to be there. That's a default setting. That's a given.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to see what the World Cup has to offer.
Yeah, same. It'll be a great summer. All right, guys, thank you so much for sending in your questions. And as always, please keep them coming. Let us know what you want us to talk about. I heard from a birdie that we might have a special guest on either next week or the following. And we'll be looking to get some more players on as well. Let us know who you want us to bring on as our guest. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Ciao.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.